We have here a fantastic lady. I can't understand how can she stay so normal after such a career. Olga, welcome here.
Thank you very much. Thank you, beautiful, beautiful, fabulous, yes.
Can you tell me, when in your career, at what level was you able to return to Russia? And did you left Soviet Union or Russia, I suppose?
Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. I left Soviet Union. And I was invited, I think it was 1997, it was already Russia, to sing in theater in St. Petersburg, to do the Traviata, away from New York Times, to try it first time. So that was my first return.
And then the boom made you be invited.
No, then I was invited for the master classes. And in 2015, the Brastsova Academy was opened in St. Petersburg. 2015. She dreamed about having her own vocal school. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it with her. I was lucky to know her. Well, we had the same agent, so that helped.
Mm-hmm. But how... what is the percent of international people
here,
students there in Obrazova Academy?
Well, at that time when we opened, I think it was mostly, there was from Russia and from former Soviet Union, some people. I don't really know the number because I was there like visiting professor because I live far away.
Do Western people have access? There?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, anybody can go. Mm-hmm. Well, now it's a difficult time. It's the country is closed, but yes.
But what you would recommend, Juilliard, Manes, or Moscow Conservatory? Or
no, they're all extremely different. They're very, very different. They at this time it's difficult to say. I think especially for singers, the best thing is when you find the teacher, follow the teacher. Mm-hmm. Because all the schools at this time now, they kind of equally the same most. Mm. Well, some of them crazy expensive, some of them not that crazy expensive. So for this reason only you can.
Do you have children that you train free?
Well, some, you mean now?
Yeah.
Well, when I go and do master classes, it's the time I spend is, and the money for my travel and for everything, so it becomes, yeah.
But I saw you are endlessly open to work and work and with such a joy and inspiration.
What I did during pandemic, at first when everybody thought that we're only closing the world for 2 months, I thought after 2 months they still need to go in an audition. And we need to help each other somehow. And this is the only help I can do. So I did master classes around the world. I mean, of course, from my computer. And that was absolutely free. I didn't charge. And so basically it ended up for like 2 years. And I remember I would start with, let's say, in the very early morning with Asia. And then we would go a little later, it will be Russia. And then it will be Europe. So we go.
How many people are you training?
I never count, whatever.
But when did you set your academy or agency? Or what is the name of your school in your studio?
No, I have a company which is Grand Stage International, and the company is not that we have a school inside. No, we do different things. We do competitions. We do this festival is our biggest project. We do master classes, and but when I do master classes, it's just whoever comes. Now in Hong Kong, I went there in June. There were a few singers, but then people who come to listen. It's
why do you travel?
I love
so
it
so much.
I just love it.
Do you pick up people from there, from up and there?
Well, it's word of mouth. You know, they find me.
Mm-hmm. No, but you choose people to
no. No, basically the organizers who are organizing it there. And personally, I believe that if somebody wants to be trained, if somebody wants to study, because usually people who study singing, they are adult already. And personally, I admire people when they want to keep learning.
I saw you have some etiquette rules for singers, for musicians. Can you give us three?
Well, it's a specific rules for the festival, for the program, like what we are now. First of all, to be in a good mood, or if you're not, pretend to be in a good mood.
I saw Olivera was in the best mood.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Why? Who would have thought, right? No, I was just kidding. So basically, you don't bring your own problems into the group. I mean, yes, we will find time for you, we'll help you, of course, but when we get together, when we get here for classes, it's like a boot camp. We need to learn the real world, and in the real world, you wake up and you go and do what you're supposed to do.
So no complaints, ever.
I mean, in the group, we can talk individually and help each other. So smile, say some nice things, even just say how beautiful you makeup today or you dress today, because we need all this little positive reinforcement.
And I think we all could learn from you a big lesson of diplomacy.
I agree. And even if someone would think that their valuable expertise is so incredibly important at this very moment, and usually it's some kind of critique, right? Yeah. Always start with something nice to say. Say that I loved you singing, but why did you do this kind of stuff? It was a little weird. I mean, so...
By the way, did you find that ingredient that makes your voice special? And why do Russian voices sound so meaty? Meaty?
Meaty, like
well, but Romanian voice is so rich. But it's different.
From east to west, there's
levels.
Levels.
But you see, at this point, you're actually asking a wrong person, because my voice was never meaty. And when I was just starting my studies in Russia, even when I was already in my master's,
small.
No, never. It's.
I'm sure.
Compared to Russian sizes, it's small. But it's not about the size, it's about projection. Mm-hmm. I can cover any house because of the training. That's why we do the training. And I remember when I was still there in Soviet Union, they were telling me you would never sing an opera. Only that's why when I came to States and I went to Manas, actually, and I auditioned for them, I did Bach 51 cantata for soprano. And they told me, they accepted me, they gave me scholarship, everything, and they said, we actually have an opera program here. And I said, no, I cannot sing opera. There was, And even the teacher, one of the teachers in Russia who actually liked my voice a lot, he told me that you are very, very good, but you would never be able to sing in the Met. And that was the house I sang the most. So the only thing what I would advise to people, if you really believe in something, if you really want to do something, just do it. Find the most important thing. I had a alumni talk in Manas, so they were asking, how many roles do we need to know by the time we finish school? So what do you think we need to be prepared for? I said, by the time you finish school, to my opinion, you have to have two most important things. Relatively good technique to survive, because when you're that young, of course you cannot know everything, and to find the person who has a good ear and knows your voice. That's it.
At what age did you have a full role learned?
Good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't. No, seriously.
In because your I remember student years.
No, I mean tried. I tried in my student years, and I know so many people learning the roles in the student years. But the thing is that our voice changes so much. So whatever you learn in student years, all these things will haunt you for life. And my favorite coach. He was a conductor. He was actually a husband of a Marilyn Horn. Mm-hmm. His name was Henry Lewis. And I asked him, too, about the roles. And he said, learn the role when you get an engagement.
Oh.
When you get a contract.
But you have to be right. Today it's something else.
Well, but that's why it becomes like a circus, you know. They learn, it's half-cooked. Because when they jump, they do 1 week of rehearsals and they jump and do something. It's not a role. Role when you know every single note. Even this, that's why we do this kind of program. It's very intense. And I always ask them, you do the note, what kind of note is this? What's the next one? Because usually when they take a breath, it's the same note. Nobody knows.
How many roles do you have?
I think I sang a little around 40 in my life.
50.
No. 30 something, 30 plus, not like 100 or 200.
Do you remember? I suppose you were very young when you had a vocal symphonic with Sir Yehudi Menuhin.
No, that was my very first professional job. I was still finishing Manus. I was in my last, and because I was there, you know, they kind of liked me and I had a scholarship and everything. So they would let me go to perform. Mm-hmm. And that was my first professional job.
Did he say you something special?
Well, he invited me to the South American tour right after that. So I was there with him. So he probably liked me. And I was extremely... I still now we talk about it in my insides go. It was unbelievable because I was from Soviet Union. For us, Menuhin, we called him Menuhin in States. In English, right, it's Yehudi Menuhin, right? He was a demigod. And when I got the contract, looking at the page, And it was C minor mass Mozart. So it's basically what I knew the best at that time. So, yeah.
I found on Spotify three CDs.
Yes.
2002, 2003, and 2004. Why at that time in your career and so well specified Italian, Mozart, Liszt, Tchaikovsky, Rachmaninoff?
Well, I had that company, the Romeo Records, who were producing my recordings. They actually told me, record anything. You can sing a phone book. We will do it. But to me, recordings is too much responsibility. It's only three.
It was on studio?
It was on studio, but like, let's say, Mozart CD, I had only 3 days, so I recorded in 3 days, so it was worse than life. I remember I was so stressed because I just came from Asia. I was there in Asia doing Verdi Otello. Mm-hmm. Then I flew to New York because it was very hot there, so I flew to New York and I went, it was, I think, November when we recorded it in St. Petersburg, so it was really cold. And so I was traveling all the time, and I only had 3 days for the recording, and
strong
I was
woman.
Oh my god, I was so stressed. I recorded Martin Allerarten from one take, from beginning to the end.
You know, I wonder.
So that one was like a performance. There are some excerpts from performances on YouTube. If you would write my name and put the Liugino. So this is from Carnegie. It's not mastered, nothing. It's just the way it is. So, yeah.
It's good because I wanted for our listeners to know more about you through singing, through your singing and CDs. And thank you for being here. You are amazing.
Well, you have amazing group of singers. It's like not we, Olga. our team, we have Ugo and Vlad here. We've done already a couple of those festivals, and this group, I'm just now talking specifically about Romanian singers, because singers who came from other countries at this time, they're already coming specifically for us, because they already know the way we work, so they know that with us you just do what we say. But usually, you know, not usually, a lot of times what happened that you start to tell singers what to do, right? And especially if they don't know you, they cannot accept maybe a little bit, or sometimes there's some kind of attitude, things. But
they are too young.
Yes, but everybody here, every single person from the day one, we actually start discussing it on day two, so we already kind of got to know them a little bit. Not a single time I heard that, but this person told me to do that. It's like, you know, I would go to different places, right? They sing something and you would say, no, let's do it this way. And instead of doing it, they will tell you the whole life story. This 3 years ago, this person told you to do this. Not a single person brought any of their own expertise, I would say. Mm-hmm. And actually in the second day, yes. In the second day, they actually came up to me and they said, thank you very much for all this information. We're like sponges, we really like to learn as much as we can. And that was literally first time in my experience with masterclasses when people actually came and say that, you know, in words. So thank you very much for that.